GW4THK.
Microphone activated.
Do I have audio, Bill?
Yeah, you do. I'm trying to put a headset on. There's just nobody saying much.
I guess not. Okay. Here for the Xylo thingy, if we want to have it. See some Xylo folks here. Also, I see my Xylo group thing went away. Maybe not. Hold on a second. There it is. I guess we could move to SDR. I didn't have it expanded. SDR projects or FPGA discussion. I renamed it to FPGA discussion group instead of Xylo.
Yeah, whatever. Let's see what's going on here. Not much. I've got my test generator for the FPGA going, so I've got some code that sits in the FPGA, and so we'll send up a 1500 hertz IQ signal as if it were coming from a sound chip, and this is for my own use to go do battle with Power SDR. It's much easier if I can have a constant input that I can work with to do the initial work. So I have to go do battle with Power SDR, and I don't know. I'm avoiding doing that this morning instead. I'm building a VHF amplifier for an FM modulator for a friend's iPod instead. Just not in a programming mood at this instant.
I don't blame you. I guess go along full focus, and that's what happens to me. I focus so hard that I get tired and just have to go away from it for a while. Yeah, very good. Have you outlined how you want to do that prioritization and multiplexing that you that talked about last week?
Other than just sort of thinking about it in background, no. I haven't done any writing on it. We'll have to come up with something. I think Phil and I might have a little more experimenting to do in terms of figuring out. I think Phil's going to change the framing a little bit, and he's also trying to. He's playing around with stuff, trying to get rid of some frame drops. So I'm going to let him sort of sort that out before I push that too hard, and I got other things in front of me. Big thing I got to get is I got to get Power SDR to talk to the Xylo and pull stuff in from it. We're getting to the point where we're blocked without that, so that's going to be the next step.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. It's out of my range of understanding, I think, at this point. But it's you're right. It's going to be very necessary to have that link, really smooth link, with all that we're talking about passing back and forth. So, Steve, how are you doing this morning? Did you get anything wired up, dead bug or whatever?
No, not yet. I'm still gathering up parts and I'm trying to further my education. And every time I look at the reflector, there's more places to go look and more things to learn, so it I'm not sure I'm ever going to get there.
I don't think I am. Not on all of it. I guess was destined for Googling, and I'm enjoying that. Just sort of seeing how the whole thing comes together from all of its parts, and as we get along here, I'm sure a simple setup with testing out the code and stuff like that will be what most of the contributors do. And anyway, I'm looking forward to doing that. I do have a Saxo board that I really haven't plugged in yet. Well, I got it plugged in and made sure that it was up and running, but that's about all I've done with it. Too much other stuff, fun stuff going on. And I guess Rick, VE3MM, is in the Xylo group too. How are you doing this morning, Rick?
Oh, I'm doing great, guys. Nice to see everybody this morning. Actually, it's this afternoon here. Nothing really to report on the Zytel. I got to get caught up here. A lot of emails have gone through my in-basket in the last few weeks, and I truthfully haven't had a chance to read all of them, but I've been trying to keep up with the gist of things. I, too, have a long learning curve ahead of me, and some people are obviously way, way ahead, and I'll probably never catch up. So that's a little discouraging, but I'm still going to plug away at it, and at least I've got the Wolfson chips and that. I'm eventually going to breadboard all that up and try and do some of the stuff that that Bill has done there. Let's see, this morning I'm building a power supply for my VNA, which is a little distraction, but I got to get that project all finished and buttoned up, and because I hate having unfinished projects on the bench. So that's pretty well it from St. Catharines.
Yeah, okay, good, Rick. Now we have Cecil here. Cecil's a prime mover in the group. I was hoping Leon would show up. He's doing the Mart Zylo replacement, but I don't see that he's here. That's why I put it at back to the noon Eastern time. Cecil, how are you making out? Yes, not. Bill, GW4THK, any comments? John, K2OX. Yes, not. In any case, we'll be listening. I'll cut the audio off here. we'll go back to editing audio for TeamSpeak last night's session. Sure did get, when listening to it, I sure did get carried away with Linux, but I think it's a very robust area for experimentation. In any case, we'll be listening on the side in the other room. I don't have a microphone, but can hear what's going on. Thanks for coming.
Eric, I wonder if you could give me a critique on the audio. I listened to one of the recordings the other day, and it sounded awful.
Oh, it sounds fine. I don't really see anything wrong with it. It's a little tunnely. I don't have a little bassy or tunnely. But that's. I also go from a WAV file, which is very big and high quality, to down to 16 kilobit MP3, so it loses a little bit in the translation.
Okay, well, this is a cheap Radio Shack headset, and I'm going to change you to do something to it if it really sounded bad, but if it's all right, I guess I'll leave it alone.
Oh yeah, just leave it alone. It's fine, perfectly understandable. I don't think we're looking for fidelity on this on TeamSpeak. Making sure we can communicate. I think Bill Black is there. Go ahead, Bill.
Bill, me or?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, actually, one thing I did sort out last night. I had mentioned, you know, that I was heating up my Zylo board and was just going to hook up an ammeter. And, yeah, lo and behold, that I had a nice little FPGA configuration. I was feeding it, and it, I think I'd be pulling about 380 mils or so, which was making the FX2 a little toasty, or perhaps a chip underneath it, although it doesn't look like there is anything underneath it. Turned out what that was I had neglected to... I had created a new project for this this IQ, you know, test generator, and I had forgotten to assign any of the output pins on the FPGA, so they were in some unknown state, and then when I dropped that into fed it into the FPGA, some, weird stuff happened, and it started pulling lots of current and didn't do much, so a symptom to add to your database and things to check. I now have a nice little breakout board for USB that lets me grab the signals and interrupt the power and insert an ammeter and see what's going on there. So I don't know. In normal running mode, it seems to be pulling somewhere between 240 and 260 milliamps.
Oh wow. I think I read somewhere that you should assign all those pins to ground or something like that. I've forgotten, but we're all unused pins. Do you have an updated picture of your lash up there?
No, I haven't done any. There was not much changed on it. I mean, the only thing that's on the board, additional stuff on the board now, is just a resistive divider to bring in the clock I get out of my GPS is a 5-volt, and it needs 3-volt into the FPGA for the reference clock. So he just runs against a voltage divider. That's the only new stuff on there. I don't anticipate adding much to that one. I do somewhat plan on building a new one. I would like to get off the Wolfson and move on to the TI PCM chip, I actually got one of the Cirrus chips in. I bought DigiKey's last one. I needed ballast for a DigiKey order this week, and that one popped up at the bargain basement price of whatever it was. So, oh well.
Okay. All right, good. I've wondered about that. I haven't done any breadboarding at all, and I just wondered how you set up the inputs to the FPGA. I guess they need to be 3 volts, and 0 to 3, is that the scheme?
I think it's 3.3, or my divider's done for 3.3. Most logic we should use, if we have a choice, we should go for 3.3. I mean, right now on this breadboard setup, I'm stealing all the power from the board. I'm taking 5-volt to drive the Wolfson, which is a fairly sleazy way to do it, and the 3-volt also to drive its logic section from the Xylo board. I haven't looked to see what the regulators on the board are actually capable of. I actually don't know in the Xylo how to run him in. I would prefer to get him off of the USB power and power him independently. I don't know that there's provision there to do it. I guess one could probably pop off the desolder the USB connector and fake it out that way, and feed your own 5-volt regulator, and just terminate the just give enough of a load on the I don't know if USB actually detects anything off the. I'd have to look at that to see how to do it. I guess Leon's board ultimately won't be bus powered, so that'll be okay that way.
Yeah, I think he won't pick the 5 volts off the FX2 chip, I'm sure. I was just wondering from my standpoint if, we're experimenting and using a logic family, what logic family would I use to do that 3.3 supply? VCC, I guess it is, and would it be a CMOS chip or just what?
I think it's either CMOS or LVTTL. I honestly don't know. I mean, there's not a heck of a lot of logic that we do. It's more the interfacing to the stuff that's out there. I mean, all the little sound chips we're looking at, I think, are 3-volt logic. They seem to be 3-volt logic and 5 or 6-volt analog sections. But, you know, the small sample I've looked at. That's right. Actually, I guess the other thing I'm going to add to this board at some point is an LVDS receiver to pull in the clock signal out of the SDR, you know, the DDS clock to do the reference counting. I did get those chips in today, and I need to pull out one of the SDRs and figure out how to daughter board that thing in there somehow and get my signals out so I can go play frequency stabilization.
Yeah. I got to go back and listen to those tutorials that Phil just posted. I didn't get a chance to do it. I've been editing audio from last night and making comment just about, I've got them posted. I just have to post them to the reflectors. And I got to get some things done this afternoon, or my wife's going to kill me. So I'll be a dead bug myself. So very good. Yeah, I was just wondering, I've always been a 5-volt, you know, TTL type person, and everything that I've ever done was 5 volts, and don't understand this new technology and what parts we should be using to play around with it. In any case, very good.
New player.
Thanks for the comments, and we'll just leave it open. I'm going to go in, finish my posting on the audio, and we'll probably post this audio too. Appreciate everybody coming, and we'll see you on the reflectors.
Okay. But, I guess just a general question to the audience here is, I mean, what are folks looking to do here? You know, when are people looking to do SDR sound card replacement and frequency stabilization, or people have other ideas? We're getting a little bit of scope creep on the, well, it's not so much scope creep as we're sort of designing in a cloud on the back plane and the board and the bus wiring and stuff. I guess some of that got corralled a little bit last night, and as we're not doing an FPGA on every board, so that's somewhat good news from my point of view. I'm somewhat of the I'm more interested in walking before or crawling before I walk on some of this stuff. I had the feeling that we might be sort of jumping to the big monster A to D converter type setup first, but maybe not.
I think the overall question, the answer to that is yes.
Yes. That, I would say the same thing. I liked Phil's description of the scope and your clarification too, and that was what I was afraid of. I guess it's getting sorted out here. We want to use this leverage all we can out of the FPGA in this project, or else we're back to individual projects with FPGAs on them, which might be the end result, a year from now, and just have a single product out of the experimenting project that we're working on right now. I guess I made myself clear and apologize too at the same time. But I think Phil probably does need it. I don't know what's involved in these LDVDS. I'm going to have to go listen to that audio. But, that might be the solution. But I'd hate to have see this go to thousands of dollars, thousands of dollars worth of boards. I think if we keep it to just the one FPGA and try to work around that with some obvious compromises that we're going to have to make, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah, the LVDS stuff is, I don't know a lot about it. I did a little researching on it when I was trying to figure out how the SDR generated his IQ. Is he essentially, the LVDS stands for, I think, low voltage differential signaling, and it's a standard, and you see it used in like the connector between the computer motherboard and the LCD panel in a, you know, one of those flexible laptop screen hinges. And what the way the signaling works is, you take you've got chips that are LVDS transmitters and receivers, and you essentially, you know, take a single-ended digital signal in one side, and he produces an LVDS signal on the outside. And you can also have them as I think it's easier if it's a single, you know, it's a unidirectional signal. If you have to do bidirectional, you can do transceivers. I just bought a few of these chips. These were single channel gizmos, and they were up to 400 megahertz, and they were about $2 a pop or somewhere in there for quantity. You know, that's like quantity one or so. You can get them as, you know, quads and duals and quads, I think. So they would add some cost. I think they have the benefit of cleaning stuff up a lot. I don't know how much jitter they might introduce if you were to, say, put a high-speed clock. Say we've got a decent, you know, 200 megahertz clock that we want to run on the bus. That might not, I don't know how much jitter you add with putting one of these things in the chain, but they certainly look reasonable. If anybody's got the Art of Electronics, if you go look at the section, now that's an old book, but he won't talk about LVDS because it didn't exist. But if you look at his section on differential signaling and how it works. He's got some amazing scope pictures of, okay, here's what the signal looks like in noise, and then here's the output of the differential receiver. The noise immunity of the things is quite good. So it looks like a decent decent signaling technology.
Yeah, okay. I guess I understand the concept. It's really pretty much beyond me, but if it's not too expensive, we can pick up whatever we need on the back plane and it remains quiet, then maybe that's the way to go. I'm going to leave you guys to make those kind of decisions. It's beyond me.
Yeeky.
It also requires two wires for every signal, the differential. When one goes up, the other one goes down. If you get a noise spike, they both go up. The device registers that as nothing going on and keep things the way they were. So it's very noise immune. It's meant for traveling some distance and not having noise pickup. A good example where that's used quite often is in modern SCSI drives. You're driving them at 300, 600 megabytes per second, and the cable could be 5 feet long.
New player.
And LVDS ensures that the signal gets there like it started out.
Well, is that the way we should be going intra-board for our high-speed signaling? Or, you know, I guess my question is, should Leon's board have something like that on it so the other boards can, pass high-speed across the backplane?
I'm not sure. In thinking about this a little bit last night when I was admittedly half asleep or on the way to being asleep, I was trying to figure out what is the fastest signal we'd expect to see on the board. I guess the fastest I came up with would be 48 megahertz if we were running the FX2 FPGA combo at a 48 megahertz clock. I'm not sure we would run anything faster than that. Some of the LVDS stuff is like, I just Googled one here and it came up as, you know, 4 gigabit per second. They've got some really high level stuff. So I don't know. I mean, on the bus, I guess I haven't done enough about it. 48 megahertz doesn't seem like an incredibly high speed clock to me. So I'm not sure I'd be that worried about it, tell you the truth. It could be what you do is if you have the need to do high speed between two cards, you could use LVDS over a twisted pair header between the two boards, I think, and go that route if you had to do it. I don't know, what do people see as sort of the highest clock they expect to see on this bus?
Well, the 200 megahertz clock from the SDR1000, but you hit on a point there that I was about to mention. The connects between the two devices need to be twisted wire. You lose a lot of the benefits when you just have parallel running lines on a bus. They still radiate and they still pick up. Twisted pair is a must.
What would be the benefits of the every other pin ground for the few signals that we're talking about passing across the bus that are high speed, as Bill mentions? Are there some simple techniques that we can use to at least give us a few paths across the backplane?
Are you talking to? I don't know. I mean, I'm a programmer. And see me with a soldering iron. You know, be afraid. Be very afraid.
By the way, the Cyclone and Cylinx chips, they both have built-in low voltage differential signaling modes. So that theoretically you do not need to put on receivers and transmitters. They're already there. But like I said, it takes two pins. So two pins would be set as a LVDS pair. And that's
player
it.
Left.
The Cylinx or the Altera chip will program those ports to act that way.
So what do you need on the other side, on the let's call it a daughter card, something else hanging on the bus? What do you need on that side to do the differential?
Well, then you need a receiver or a transmitter, depending what that other board is doing. But the FPGA itself already has them. So you save some there. And if you're talking one FPGA to another FPGA, using double wires for every signal, then you don't need nothing. You just set both ports to differential mode.
Okay. Well, anyway, I guess that we need to translate what we expect to do, or what we need as far as high speed goes across the bus to Leon. So we can design it in or whatever. I guess if it's doing LVDS to begin with, then he doesn't have to design anything. Then we got to do it on the with transceivers on the boards that we're designing, other than the board that Leon is putting the FPGA on.
One thing to think about. Like I said, twisted pair works the best. So if you had, for example, on the motherboard, if the socket that you plug into the motherboard, or let's say one of them or something, has wire wrap pins on it so they stick out the bottom, not too much, then you can buy these little twisted pair jumpers And that would do much better than running traces between one socket and another, because it's the tight twist all the way to the connection on the socket. Something for somebody to think about.
Okay, well, I think probably you and Leon and probably Phil Covington need to carry this discussion, you know, as to what the best, what our best, kind of, even if it's a compromise, what the best compromise is. Maybe Lyle also. Lyle seems to know a lot about it, too. So maybe get a discussion that pikers like me stay out of and let you guys come up with a reasonable solution to the firecracker that was thrown.
I suggested that, and I got no takers.
Well, sometimes it takes a while for all that to settle in to everybody and come to a common conclusion that that's the way a lot of this stuff goes. Bill, getting back to your original question about where is everybody headed, I think everybody's headed with a common original project to do away with the sound card kind of thing. And then from there, I think there's going to be a spread out of different projects to maybe utilize that or maybe plug in another card to do their own thing. That's kind of what I'm looking at in the future. But I don't know that this particular project can encompass everything. And I think it might be a mistake to try to do that.
No, but I've been having the discussion to figure out how we can make the back plane reasonably customizable and go forward from there is probably a good thing. Hey, Cecil, do you know anything about the goodness of the LVDS capabilities of the FPGAs? The National, when I was reading through their stuff, had a... I don't know, they sort of dissed the LVDS capabilities, FPGAs. Some degree, you got to consider the source and that they're trying to sell LVDS chips. But I decided to go with dedicated receiver transmitter chips to get the signals I wanted out of the SDR. It was an easy decision. Gerald's got one chip in a family in there, and I decided, well, okay, I'll just use the same family, and, you know, it'll all hopefully play nice together.
It makes somewhat sense, their claim, that is driver in the FPGA is not going to be as good, because a single chip can have pretty hefty current driving capability, while a FPGA with hundreds of pins can't afford to do that because it's going to get a little too warm. So personally, I don't know, but I would suspect that maybe the drive on the FPGA is a little weaker, so it might not be good for 20 feet like some of those drivers are, 20, 25 feet.
Yeah, it was sort of my suspicion that I don't know that we're moving. I mean, a lot of these things are built for speeds higher than what we're looking at. I was seeing stuff in the 800 megahertz, 1.2 gigahertz range. So it's it may be stuff that's not exactly what we need, or not of the class we need. But stuff to consider.
Something worth experimenting, even if it's an FPGA talking to itself, out one low voltage differential pair and back in another one, and see that you get the same thing and connect it with, let's say, something reasonable. In the back plane, it's just going to be a couple of inches. So, boy, that's not much of a test. But if you were going to use, for example, a cable going to the SDR-1000, then you're probably going to need at least 5 feet of cable, so you have a little bit of freeway in where you put this box. So a 5-foot twisted pair cable, you know, take it out of an Ethernet 5E cable, and there you have a twisted pair that's made specifically for transporting gigahertz signals, and see what happens. 5 feet, I think, will probably make it fine.
What if you were to do just that, Cecil? What if we were to put an RJ45 on the front of the FPGA board that Leon's designing and run pins to it, and then on, let's say, the board that Bill's designing, we set up the transceivers the way, you know, we're talking about the LVDS.
Yeah, some kind of little connector so that the thing I'm afraid we're getting is we're trying to make that board so pure that to do anything, you have to get another board. And that sort of defeats the whole thing. There's certain basic things that we got to have in there. One is, how are we going to bring that clock into that board? I mean, why have another board bring in the clock and then move it over to the FPGA? The FPGA is going to need to do that. Stuff like that. If you bring it to a connector and you bring it to the proper pin so that they're a LVDS pair, then, you know, you can... If you want to discipline your clock, you've got the mechanism right there. No need to build another board.
Yeah, that's sort of an interesting question. Because, like, in the setup I'm looking at for the clock discipline, I'm down at the, you know, HF range, 50 megahertz maximum, or 60 megahertz, I guess, if you go to the full claimed range of the radio. You know, is that has to get to the FPGA. I had anticipated potentially needing to take that into a board, you know, a somewhat minimal board sitting in the channel that, you know, had the LVDS receiver on it and then turned it to single-ended. And then I would, you know, tie into, you know, a user FPGA pin somewhere. I mean, I would hope we could get 50 megahertz across the backplane relatively well, but, you know, I could be wrong there. The other nice thing about the LVDS is it would give us a hell of a lot more immunity to RFI, which... in the application we're looking at, you know, would probably be motherhood and goodness.
Sorry. It also creates a lot less RFI, because if you got a little connector on the FPGA board and you need to get some 24 megahertz clock over somewhere else, if you run that through a little jumper that has tightly twisted Cat5e cable, well, that is precisely made so it does not radiate. It's a balanced line. It's a transmission line. That's basically what a twisted pair cable is. It's a transmission line. Get power from here to there, but nothing in between lets the power go out in the air. And that's precisely what we want. You don't want the stuff radiating all over the place.
So, I mean, well, I guess the question to ask the folks that know something about this is, you know, sitting on the boards right now, we've got potential to do a, well, all right, it looks like there could be three high-speed clocks that we need to move around. The Master FX2 clock, which is up to 48 megahertz. The Master Audio Sampling clock, which is 24.5 megahertz. And then let's say a reference clock out of the SDR, which could be 50 megahertz in my world, or 200 megahertz if somebody goes off and tries to pull the 200 megahertz oscillator off of the SDR itself. So, you know, what is the right way to do, and all of those signals, need to get the pins at the FPGA. So do we put some number of channels, right? We can think of at least three now. Perhaps we say, you know, five or something that are LVDS channels, and you're going to have to put, potentially put LVDS receivers and transmitters on your add-in card to get at those signals. Interesting stuff to think. I don't know enough about it to know if it's needed or not. The immunity to RFI and I'm not so much worried about the radiating of RFI. It's the having the thing sort of blow its brains out anytime you transmit is more of a downer than birdies and things in my world.
5200 megahertz, that's nothing to LVDS. That's just, it can handle that while sleepwalking. So if you use nice, tightly twisted wires to conduct the signal, then it's fairly immune to stuff coming in. Well, you guys know all about radio. A transmission line, which is tightly, one of the ways to do it is, by the way, those cables in Cat5, 100 ohm impedance. It's 100 ohm impedance transmission line, and what does the transmission line does if it's balanced both ends? It doesn't pick up, it doesn't radiate, so it works both ways, and you end up with a clean clock on the other side.
Minus whatever the LVDS receiver may or may not do to it. Yeah, I mean, I think we're within the capabilities of LVDS. I wonder if anybody knows. Clearly, there's a way to route these things on PC boards where you get a 100 ohm characteristic impedance. I know there's some stuff on the national site on recommendations on how to do that and stuff. Interesting ideas.
I don't know about the Altera, but I've been reading up on the Xilinx chip, and the Xilinx chip, you can override what the impedance of that pin is. If you want to, you can say, I want that pin impedance to be 100 ohms, 50 ohms, or 200 ohms, whatever it is you want, within reason of the range of logic. But LVDS carries clock through cables for SCSI drives, 25 feet, and they all get there synchronizing and just blasting away just perfect. So, and actually SCSI is just a very mild application for it. It's really nice technology. It works quite well compared to the old-fashioned high voltage differential.
That's true. So, but, well, I don't know, anybody have an opinion on the need for it, for the level of signals we're talking about? It sounds like it might be interesting for some stuff. It's probably on the verge of being overkill for the 24 and 48 megahertz class clocks, I suspect.
But here's my thought on it. It could be, it might work without it, but if you're laying out the FPGA board and you bring 10 I/O signals to a little 10-pin header, why is it going to hurt? If we got to have LVDS, we got it. If we don't need it, don't put the connector in. It doesn't cost us anything. The board has tons of room on there.
Yeah, but it's got to come out the front. There's no way to route something like that except by coming out the front, at least not in the design we have. If it's open frame or you don't have an enclosure around it, you can get it that way, but it most definitely has to come out the front with a twisted pair, and if that's the case, then why not go with a RJ45, which is a little big, but it does meet the requirement that you're talking about, and it gives us four differential paths.
Well, I've got lost. Why does it have to come out the front?
Well, we're talking about inter-board connections off a pin header. How are we going to route it otherwise? On the bus, we don't have any room on the bus. At least, not that I can see.
And we're talking using twisted pair cable, so that doesn't, that kind of rules out the bus. It's just an option that it be there, whatever kind of connector you put on there, but some kind of little connector that can take the twisted pair and take it over to the next board over and keep that clock intact and not radiate all over creation.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that with RJ45. I would probably do it with just, 100 Berg headers and, use little Molex connectors and to twisted pair. The RJ45 connectors, actually, from a practical point of view, I don't like using them because cutting holes in boxes for them, they require square holes. I'd much rather go with something that's round and drillable.
There's also an advantage to what you just mentioned, a Berg pin header. What if you need one clock on this board and you need a clock on another board? Well, with Berg headers, you just have a two-wire little header with females on them, tightly twisted, and you plug it into pins 1 and 2. And then for board number 3, way on the other side, you connect it to 3 and 4 with another little two-pin Berg female header that plugs into that thing, and they can go whichever way they want to go, or they can go head out the back and leave the system and into the radio.
Okay, well, I can buy that. How about a 10-pin right angle header coming off the front of the board then?
Yeah, and if we decide that we don't need it, well, don't populate it. But I do believe we have the room, and if we do need it, we're screwed if it doesn't have it.
Okay, well, let's bring that suggestion. I mean, I don't know. You know the most about it here, so I'm just commenting from a physical standpoint here. That sounds like a good plan to me. This thing isn't going to be the beautiful end product. I mean, I never envisioned that this is going to be a silkscreen front panel with, the end product in mind. If we're going to do a sound card, then in the end we just take, like I said the other day, and fold the FPGA right onto the same board that we're going to market in the end. The final product doesn't have to go in this box, but it makes for a very nice experimental box. But it seems to me like a little 10-pin right angle. We need a commonly available, I think 10-pin is a very commonly, 5 pins and 5 pins stacked with Berg connections coming off the front of the board, I think is probably the way to go then.
If you make the bottom row 1 pin, the top row the other pin, then you can just take these 2 little pin headers and go and pick off the pair you want. And you got some flexibility. Now, the Berg header could be recessed back a little bit in so that it doesn't stick past the board. You can do that. And if you don't want to mess around with if you want to really put the cabinet all the way flush to the card, you could have the Berg connector, let's say, half an inch in, so you could plug in the cable and take it off the side, and off it goes.
Yeah, okay. If that'll solve some of our noise problems and make it more noise immune, of course, the receiver board has to have the LVDS, serializers or whatever we're talking about here, I haven't read about it. Phil posted some stuff up there that I intend to read, but in any case, that seems like a happy medium for us. It doesn't use SMAs or SMBs or the small coaxial connectors.
Is there... I'm sorry. I hadn't paid a lot of attention to what was going on with the cabinet selection and all that stuff. What are we looking at? Is the cabinet flush to all the boards on all sides? Or, am I, to go from board to board, am I coming out and in outside the cabinet and going back in? Or I'm a little confused as to why these are right angle and flush and things like that.
The cabinet design is that the project boards are going to plug into the bus. There's four connectors in the back of the bus for bus-mounted cards, and they will be flush against the front of the cabinet. So your connections going to the radio or USB or anything are along the front face of the board and will protrude through the front of the, eventually through a plate that is on the front of the cabinet. It doesn't really even have to be closed for our usage right now. But in any case, everything is on the opposite side of the bus connector. Everything is flush against the front of the enclosure.
What about let me visualize this as sitting in the bottom of this box. I have the backplane board, and I can plug boards into that, up to four of them in a 90 degrees, so that they're 90 degrees coming out of that backplane board. There's a front side of those and a back side of those of the extension boards, which will be flush to the cabinet. Now, what about the height of the cabinet? Is there clearance above the cabinet where if I'm routing signals from one board to another where I could put, twisted pair jumpers or, board-to-board cables on the side of the accessory board that is opposite the connector into the backplane board?
No. In fact, the connectors take up the full, almost the full height of the board, so there's no way to get around the connectors in the back, and there's no way to get out through the top. The boards are 100 millimeters, they're actually 100 millimeters by 100 millimeters, so they're roughly 4 by 4. Front of the board is the only thing that gives you access to the outside world. Except for the power connector that we're talking about being mounted on the opposite side of the board. But so far, that's the plan. There is no way to get around these boards. They slide into vertical slots.
So either you have to have a notch on the board to let the cable move through to the other to some other board next to it, or the front panel fits close but not completely flush against the board, so there is room for a twisted pair to go by, or RG174 or something of that real skinny cable.
I don't know. I think it would be tough because we are talking about sliding in. Sliding them in, you can't put a notch on the top or the bottom of the board. You could probably notch out the front, where it slides in, and then make the connections before you put a front flat panel on. Or we'd have no front panel at all. I don't know. this is a good question. I think we have to just plan on using the front 100 millimeters of the board for all our off-board connections going to the outside world.
I'm still a little bit lost. If I if I look at this thing and I put motherboard sitting flush on the table, and then have up to four boards sticking into this, coming out of that motherboard at a right angle. So for the extension boards, I have the bottom of the extension board is, let me define that to be that which plugs into the motherboard. The top is the piece sitting up in the air, and then I have a front and a back side of those. So the front side and the back side are sliding into a slot in the cabinet?
Yes. That's correct. If you have the motherboard flat on the table, as you say, and then you plug the boards in vertically, they're coming straight up. On the top side, or on the high side, there is where you have all your connections to the outside world. And on the front, in the back, in that analogy, is the part that slides into the cabinet. And they can be independently, you have one board or up to four boards sliding into that front of the cabinet. Probably, I think Phil's two-dimensional drawing that he posted is the best one to look at, Phil Covington, that is. He's showing the cabinet with all of the grooves, and it would be vertically mounted boards. And we have about, half of the cabinet, 3 inches, on the left-hand side if you're looking at it from the front, for other things that are not bus connected.
Right, but I think the confusion for Bill might be, so if you're in card A and you need to get a 200 megahertz signal over to card D, how the heck do you do it without doing it through the bus? The answer right now is the card is absolutely, totally wedged in from all four sides with no space or anything. I see that as a problem.
Yeah, unless you don't have a cabinet.
And not having a cabinet's not that, isn't that great an idea. What's the card-to-card spacing?
It's going to be 80 millimeters. Is that right? No. Sorry. It's roughly 3/4 of an inch, just a little bit over. It's metric. And we have the provisions with the spacing that Phil posted to slide a shielding board in between each card.
It's roughly 8/10 of an inch.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I was looking for.
So it would seem to me that I could drill through either the front or the back and provide a hole if I needed external world connectors to come through to line up with that hole if I did it, It seems like there should be enough space there to do that, or am I missing something?
Yeah, you have just one edge that you opposite the bus, which is 100 millimeters, and you got to put all your connectors, push the keyer inputs and microphone inputs and what all. That's got to go in that 100 millimeters along the front edge of the board, up to 3/4 of an inch high off the project board. That's the design parameter. But you've got a 100 millimeters on the front edge of the board as they're being pushed into the cabinet vertically that you put all your connectors on.
The front edge is opposite the bus connector or at right angles to the bus connector?
Opposite.
All right. Now, but why? I'm not sure I understand the reason I can't come through the cabinet on either the left or the right edge. You know, and drill a hole through there and come out from aboard that way.
Because you're going to be drilling through another board. The way the space is, the card slides into the cabinet with metal sides for the slides. No room for anything to go through. The back is the motherboard flushed all the way against it. The front, the metal plate of the front, is flushed all the way against the board, so there's no room anywhere for a cable to go from one signal to another without going through the motherboard, because there just isn't any room for anything. Personally, I don't think... I mean, we'll have to look at some of the devices, but I think you could have the panel be not totally flush with the board. It could be off a little bit, enough distance to get a RG-174 or twisted pair through there to then move on down.
What's wrong with coming off outside the panel with the twisted pair or the RG-174? That's my concept. is that we really don't need to put it behind a back panel. We're looking for the enclosure is right now for more for stability and everything else, but I see no reason why the pin header or whatever else just doesn't project right through a future panel. We haven't even designed a front panel for it yet, since it's an experimenter's type thing. But I don't see any reason why you don't have the twisted pair just coming right, going from board to board right in the front of the cabinet.
Very simple reason. He's in Central Florida, and he got big ears, and he's kind of black. He's called Mickey Mouse. Now you got bird pins sticking outside of the box, which, by the way, are very easily damaged. And you got little jumpers that can snag, can be pulled off. And when you're running off to some piece of equipment, you have no choice. But when it's something that's between boards and the equipment, it ought to be the main purpose of a cabinet is to protect the stuff on the inside. So if we have all these jumpers on the outside to go from the inside to the outside, back to the inside, that is not going to protect that stuff very well.
Okay. Well, we most definitely are going to have a microphone input and a keyer input and what all else, speaker output. And we've got a lot of things coming off the fill bell board that are going to be right along that, flush along that front edge. I don't know. That's a good point. I just don't know what to say about it. Just throw it out onto the reflector and see what other folks have to say about it. I do like the bird connector idea on the front edge of just as long as it's like five pins, that's small enough to do. Although you're right, they're easily damaged.
Well, see, phone key. Maybe keying output or something. All that stuff is necessary stuff that has to connect to the outside world. But stuff that connects to the inside world should not be out there in the open to be damaged, to be pulled by accident, and stuff like that. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the cabinet, is to protect all of it as much as you can from the environment, people, everything else under the sun. And it could be accomplished. Say, I bet you if we look, if we mount those connectors all the way to the edge of the board, I bet you that panel cannot come flush to the board. You'll have to recess the panel away from the board a little bit to get everything to seat properly, because nobody else makes the panels that flushes against the board. When the board has connectors that connect through a panel, there's always a gap because the connectors stick out quite a ways, and therefore you will have some kind of gap. Doesn't have to be very big to put a twisted pair through.
Okay. Well, here's my take on that, and my, we've obviously got to go from board to board, not across the bus, or we at least have to provide the facility for doing that. My suggestion in that case is, instead of recessing the boards away from the front panel, is that we, on the lower, perhaps the lower side of the front panel, that we mount a perhaps channelized aluminum, half inch, or maybe we need a little bit more, but almost like a drawer or a door, that we run our front bus, let's call it the front side bus, cables into, have it slightly recessed, and it also allows for protection. I mean, that way you could run 174 in it, or you could run twisted pair, or just whatever we need. In other words, I'll design a front panel, or we'll design a front panel that has a little channel, let's say along the lower edge, that allows us intra-outboard connections.
Where's space for that channel going to come from? The card flushes right against the front panel.
Well, basically, what I'm talking about is a populated. This becomes part of the front panel. It's not a part of the board itself. It's when we put the front panel on. We just have a protective conduit, basically, as part of the front panel.
The part I don't understand is you have a square board that goes from the top of the inside to the bottom of the inside. There's no room for anything else. And, check with Leon or some of these other guys. Leon ought to know, because he mounts components on there. When you mount a jack on a board that's going to be your microphone input, the front panel doesn't come all the way into the board. The front panel's off maybe an eighth of an inch, because the jack protrudes out quite a ways. And so will many connectors and things like that. They protrude quite a ways out. LEDs, they protrude out as long as you've got leads on. They come with pretty long leads. They wouldn't need very long, an eighth of an inch or something. But you may want to check with Leon that if you mount a phono jack flush with the edge of the board, how far out does the panel need to be? And you'll find out that the panel needs to be maybe an eighth of an inch away or something like that. And an eighth of an inch gives us the room. You mount your connector, you mount your LEDs, you put the front panel and everything sticks through. You put your nuts to tighten the connector down, and bingo, you're in business. You still got the concept you want. We've got a little eighth of an inch to route wires through in there. And what you do, you plug your board, you plug your connectors, and then you put in the front plate and bolt it down, and nobody's going to be pinched because there's an eighth of an inch there.
Okay. All right. Well, my suggestion is, instead of going in, I understand what you're saying. Most definitely, all the connectors, the everything we connect to it protrudes through the metal plate, and maybe not. We want a little clearance between the front plate and the boards. I agree with you there, but everything protrudes through that, just like it does in the SDR. I mean, if you look at the design of the SDR as an example, everything protrudes through the back panel, through holes in the back panel. And that's what we're suggesting about for a front panel. But what I was suggesting, instead of grooving the board, let's say we groove the lower edge of the board out and put this 10-pin intra board connector, and then we, as we're assembling, we slide all the boards in, and then, you know, jumper across what we want between the different project boards, and then put the front panel on. That would work too. I'm just suggesting, instead of notching the boards out and going, you know, providing a pathway between boards inside or underneath the front panel, is just creating a little conduit on the lower side of the front panel to do the same thing. Anyway, maybe we just need to draw it out, and maybe this drawing tool that I think you suggested it, this markup tool that we were talking about, maybe that should be the way we, you know, draw some physical diagrams.
Okay, but when you try to figure all this out, just remember, I'm not talking about notching out the boards. The boards stay 100 by 100. The connectors are mounted all the way to the edge of the board, except for the little Berg header. That's recessed back in. Your phono jack, your key jack, your whatever else you're going to do. But the housing is a little bigger than the board, so there's like an eighth of an inch. And then you mount that plate on there, and all the connectors protrude through, but there's still this tiny little gap between the board and the front plate. That's all. And that'd be good enough. Anyway, I guess you'll figure something out.
Yeah, okay. I understand what you're saying. We just need to probably draw it and bounce it off the reflector. And should we want, ultimately, yes, obviously we're going to want a little aluminum plate we can put over the thing, even this project board, which I don't think will be that hard to do. And Bill's point is taken, you know, it's hard to drill square holes. So it's nice to have the nice round holes and do it on the drill press. Anyway, I think we've identified some areas where we need some discussion and needs to go on the reflector, and we need some sort of markup tool.
I want to get back to what I'm doing. I'm trying to move my PCs into my bedroom, and a couple of them for right next to my bench, and set them all up so I can play computers and have my Xylo board and stuff like that all laying on my bench, and we'll be able to work on it. Because right now my computer desk, I don't think I have 5 square inches of room anywhere.
Okay, I need to go to got a bunch to do non-electronic stuff. Anyway, thanks everybody. And Bill, if you could, like you had done before, I cut the audio off a little early there, thinking we were all going to go. But if you could just put that as somewhere and point me to it on your website, I'll download it, edit, and post.
Okay, yeah, I'll put it up as 32K MP3 probably, or what was I going to say? Oh, I hadn't realized that there's only one side of the box that we've got capabilities to do connectors through. It's seeming a little limiting at the moment. To look at most things is you usually bring connectors out a front and a back, or you usually have controls on the front, connectors out the back. I'm starting to wonder if that's I don't know. I have to go find the drawings and see what this thing actually looks like. I hadn't paid much attention to it up until now, but yeah, I'll send you the audio in a bit.
Yeah, it's a standard bus structure. I guess like a PCI bus where you have everything coming out the back of the computer. Anything to the real world goes out the back, and except it's at right angles instead of 180 degrees out of phase, which is what I first suggested. But you know, we decided on the VME type bus structure, and but you know, everything is connected to one output side, and the input sides for the most part just go along the PCI bus.
Okay, I'll have to go look at it. All right, I'll send you the audio.